By the time of his assassination in 1963, John F. Kennedy stood at the helm of the greatest power the world had ever seen, a booming American nation that he had steered through some of the most perilous diplomatic standoffs of the Cold War. Born in 1917 to a striving Irish-American family that had become among Boston's wealthiest, Kennedy knew political ambition from an early age, and his rise to become the youngest elected president cemented his status as one of the most mythologized figures in American history. Frederick Logevall is the Lawrence Belfer Professor of International Affairs and Professor of History at Harvard University. He has spent much of the last decade searching for the real JFK, and the new book is JFK, Coming of Age in the American Century, 1917 to 1956, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Frederick Logevall to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, I'm delighted to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you with us. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed this book. Well, let me ask you this in a question form, which is, I learned so much that I didn't know, and given how much has been written about this man, and I realize this is probably a much-asked question to you, of what led you down the path to say, okay, there's enough here to capture your curiosity to say this story should be told?
Well, we have, as you say, we have abundant books, to say the least, on this or that aspect of the Kennedy administration, Kennedy's marriage, let's say, the assassination, of course, has spawned its own cottage industry of books. What I don't think we have, and what led me to do this in part, was a kind of comprehensive biography, one that in particular looks at the early life, because it seems to me that Kennedy is like all of us, or most of us, which is he's fundamentally shaped by his teens and his 20s, and in his case, serving in the South Pacific in World War II, and everything associated with the Second World War, it seemed to me this was probably an especially important period. And as you say, the materials are wonderful at the Kennedy Library and elsewhere. And so I thought these combination of things were a kind of opening for me to tackle this great American life.
So when you decided you wanted to tackle it, where do you begin?
Well, so, you know, historians, historians, biographers, we probably all do it a little differently. For me, it was going down to the Kennedy Library, which is a marvelous research facility just down the road from where I am, and going through boxes, going through the letters. The family wrote a lot of letters in the 30s and in the 40s, and those, of course, are a goldmine for somebody like me. It's also then looking at existing books. The existing biographies were helpful, obviously, going through oral histories, interviews done with people, including many right after the assassination. And so therefore they have to be used with a certain amount of caution, but they were nevertheless super helpful. And then putting it all together and beginning to think about an outline, beginning to think about what the narrative is going to be. And then little by little, a book takes shape.
You write in the book about Joe Jr., who is the eldest of the Kennedy siblings, and for much of his childhood, for Jack, that Joe was the golden child. He was the one being groomed.
Oh yeah, he was. I mean, he is the firstborn. He is incredibly handsome, a sort of movie star handsome young man. He is really healthy, unlike Jack. Very fit, very athletic, very strong, and he is, I think it's fair to say, his mother's favorite and his father's favorite. And so he is groomed, as you say, for greatness. And I think it's a really interesting story, the sibling rivalry, the difficulty that Joe Jr. has with the fact that Jack begins to outshine him in certain ways. It's his senior thesis at Harvard that gets published as a book. It's Jack who has the heroic service in the Second World War, and then of course ultimately Joe Jr. Is killed in a kind of almost a suicide mission, a crazy bombing operation in the closing months of World War II, and it leaves Jack, in a sense, to fulfill the ambitions of his parents and become take that role that was meant to be Joe Jr.'s.
And you make the point in the book that while it may have been thought, it has been thought in the past that the parents and especially the father are pushing and saying that they're forcing this political career mm-hmm. on Jack now that his brother has died. But you say, looking at the materials that he's sending home from the war, it's very clear this is something he wants to do.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the really interesting revelations to me is that I had kind of bought into this idea that it's only when Joe Jr. dies that this becomes a live possibility for his younger brother. But in fact, as you say, already in 42, so even before he goes to the South Pacific, even before he serves in the war, in 42, we have evidence that he and a girlfriend are talking about elected office for Jack. And in fact, this is being picked up by the FBI. A fascinating little side story. Her name is Inga Arvad. She's a suspected Nazi spy, and so she's under FBI surveillance. And so they're listening in on the phone calls and on the hotel room stays, shall we say, of Jack and Inga. And they talk about political office for him. That's in 42, long before Joe Jr. is killed. And I also suggest in the book that even as a child, Jack is fascinated by politics, deeply interested in it. His grandfather, Honey Fitzgerald, his maternal grandfather, is a legendary Boston politician, very different kind than Jack Kennedy turns out to be. But nevertheless, they're very close. He majors in government at his concentration at Harvard is government. So, yeah, I think he had his own reasons for choosing political office. Now, if Joe had survived the war,
right.
It's interesting to speculate about whether Jack could still have entered politics, or would that lane have been closed? That's a separate issue.
What is also interesting in that is that there's such a competitive streak between the two brothers. They are so fiercely competitive that adds to it too, right? That even after Joe's death, that Jack says, okay, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah, no, I think it's there. Excuse me one second. It's there at the end. I think it's something that drives in many ways the relationship between the two of them and Joe Jr. right up until the last mission, that fatal mission, which in part he may even have undertaken. He may have volunteered. We don't know for sure, but he may have volunteered for that fatal final mission that led to his death in a mid-air explosion because he wanted to match Jack's exploits in the South Pacific. His happened over England, his death. But I do think then that when Jack is running for the House in the 11th District of Massachusetts, the memory of Joe is very much in his mind. I don't think he was ever as consumed, by the way, by the rivalry as Joe Jr. was. I think this meant more to his brother than it ever did to him, but it's there.
And Jack's time in the war, and given his illnesses, he is a war hero. His actions during the war are fairly amazing.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I don't think anybody would credit him for allowing his patrol boat, his PT-109 was the number. I don't think anybody would credit him for allowing the boat to be rammed. That's hardly a heroic action, and I think one could say, he should have been able to maneuver and not allow it to be rammed. But after the actual collision,
right.
He, I think, deserves the heroic label. I do think that the actions that he took to save the majority of his crew, to figure out their game plan until they could be rescued, which took about 6 days. It's really quite extraordinary, and I tell that story in the book. And, I think it's telling that all of his crew members, both then in terms of their contemporaneous statements, but also what they said in the years to come, There was never a word of criticism, and in fact, they tended to praise what he did and how he did it, the kind of unflappability, the courage, some of the things we associate with JFK, I think they spoke to.
Frederick Liljevall is our guest. The name of the new book is JFK, Coming of Age in the American Century, 1917 to 1956. Let us talk about the relationship with another sibling, which you also write about, and that is his sister, Rosemary. It is a tragic story, but yeah. He is a very doting brother.
He is. I think when they're growing up, you know, she's only 18 months younger than he is, and it's clear from an early point that she is developmentally behind the others. She struggles with, you know, with writing and reading. Her attention span is really limited. And I think it's quite touching to see both Jack and Joe Jr. And Kathleen, who's the next oldest, all of them are attentive, and they make sure that she's included in dances in Hyannisport and so forth. And then there is, as you say, this really terrible development, this botched lobotomy. I think Joe Sr., the father, thought that this would actually help Rosemary, and there was a lot of... There were a lot of articles at the time that suggested, oh, yes, your patient, your child or spouse will come out of this much better. And, of course, it went disastrously wrong. She came out much worse. In a sense, he lost her. He lost one sibling even before he lost Joe Jr. in 44 and then Kathleen, the person he was really closest to among his siblings. Kick, as she was known. Kick died in a plane crash in 1948. The family tragedies, and of course they would continue, as we all know. It's just remarkable.
When you are looking at, as you say, you know, we know how this went on, and your defined span here of 1917 to 1956, what do you see in that time that leads so much to the JFK that we know and the JFK who was elected president of the United States?
I think what I see, I mean, there's a lot one could say here, but I do see an emerging seriousness. I don't think he was the callow young man of our imaginations, which is not to say he didn't enjoy a good time. He was, you know, he's very interested in girls, for example, and enjoying himself. But I think what I see, even in his undergraduate papers, for example, is somebody who's thinking a lot about democracy and what's required of democracy in ways that I think resonate today, frankly. So I see that from an early point. We also see that self-deprecating wit that we associate with Jack Kennedy. That's there in these letters and in some of his early dealings with people. And I guess the third thing I would just add is there is this ambition. And as we've discussed, a desire to have some role to play. His parents, to their credit, preach the importance of public service. I think he took that. He could have been, because he was a millionaire by age 20, 21. He could have been a kind of beachcomber type. Mm-hmm. But in fact, you know, he determined that he was going to enter politics and have something to say about the great problems of the day. And that proved to be powerful. And of course, that was with him until Dallas in 63.
How, and we just have less than a minute, but
yeah.
How different was he from other Kennedys in the sense of, do we see these traits in throughout the family?
I think to some extent we see them. I think that in a different age, Eunice, one of his sisters, would have been a very formidable political candidate. She was really impressive. She was a lot like Jack in many ways. So, you know, we could talk about that. Bobby, of course, comes into his own. He's much younger. He's very important in Jack's Senate campaign in 52, which I write about, and later. And the other kids, too, we could talk about. I think where we see differences is that Jack is the more introspective one, certainly among the older kids. He's the reader. he's the one who has a kind of romantic sensibility underneath his cool pragmatism. He likes poetry, which is not something, by the way, he likes people to necessarily know about. So one sees, I think, also the fact that he's, as I put it at one point in the book, he is of the family and very devoted to the family, by the way, but he's also outside it in a certain, totally, to me at least, fascinating way.
The name of the book, JFK, Coming of Age in the American Century. Frederick Wogevall is the author, and the book is published by Random House. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.